And welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. She is Anita Marks. I'm Lance Medow with you for the next 60 minutes as we'll get you set for the final preseason game tonight at MetLife Stadium against the New England Patriots. We'll also look ahead to some of the tough decisions that the Giants are going to have to make as they try to narrow down the roster to 53 by Saturday afternoon. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat as well on Twitter. So, Anita, let's first get into tonight's preseason game, and then obviously we'll get to some phone calls and tweets along the way. They got rid of a number of players to get down to 75, but when you look at the players that were waived, 12 were waived, and only 3 had regular season experience. So when you look at the current 75-man roster, Anita, there's a lot of competition because there's a lot of players with plenty of experience still on this team at various positions across the board here.
There are, but let's understand that coming into this game, the coach is kind of – this is preseason game number 4. It's been, a lengthy OTA. It's been a lengthy training camp. The Giants, their coaching staff already has – an idea of how many wide receivers they're going to keep, linebackers, and who's on that bubble. And I think for the most part, I think fans, I think we kind of know as well. I think we know who to keep an eye on later on tonight. I always think that it's probably one of the most difficult things to do as a head coach and as a position coach. Because especially if you do watch Hard Knocks, it's actually one of my favorite episodes of Hard Knocks. And that's where they kind of take you in the room where the coaching staff sits around the table. And, you might have a wide receiver coach stand up and really argue for, let's say, somebody like King or Lewis, for example. And then you've got the linebacker coach who's going to stand up and really argue for somebody, like Casper Brinkley or something like that. So anyway, my whole point is the next few days are going to be pretty tough. But I think going into this game, the Giants and the Giants coaches know exactly who to keep an eye on and who might – will it be that one play? Will it be that one play, that recovered fumble, that forced fumble, that interception? You know what I mean? That's going to take that one player over the hump? Maybe. That's what's fun.
Well, sometimes you're right. It does come down to that. A special teams play, for example.
Exactly.
It could be a linebacker who's trying to distinguish himself from the rest of the group. And as you mentioned, he recovers a fumble or he makes a tackle in open space. It's the little things like that. Well, speaking of some of those tough positions, as you mentioned, the coaches have an idea who has the edge coming into this game. But I do think there are some close battles. And probably the two most notable positions, Anita, linebacker, which still has a lot of players in the mix. They didn't really get rid of any linebackers at this point. And also wide receiver. We pretty much know who the top 4 are going to be, but there are 5 other wide receivers on this roster that, to me, Anita, are battling for 2 spots. Tavares King, I think, is definitely within that group and probably the top of the list after that impressive performance in the preseason. But after him, Jeremy Davis, Roger Lewis, Powell. I mean, you have a number of other options here in the mix.
Yeah, and Ben McAdoo spoke to the media yesterday and said Victor Cruz is going to play this game. I know he needs to, right? Because he didn't play in 1, he didn't play in 2. He had a solid practice leading into 3. He had a solid practice this week, of course, leading into 4. But what frightens me is the reason you just said, right? Guys know that this is their last chance. Their last chance to make that play, to get that big hit. I understand why Victor Cruz needs to play today. How many series, how many quarters is he going to be in? But I'll be honest with you, I'm a little nervous about it because you've got, you know what it is? This is what it is. It's like it's playing pickup basketball. Like I won't play pickup basketball with a bunch of young boys anymore because
You have no faith in the jump shot anymore.
Well, no, it's not that. It's like if my jump shot is on and they're frustrated, I'm worried that they're going to undercut me. I'd rather go.
Oh, so you're saying you're too good for the competition? That's what you were insinuating
that
there.
That's what
I'm reading into.
I
thought you were concerned about your skill set. Now it's like they're not good enough to contain me.
So
they're going to then all of a sudden get back at me for being too good.
That's not what I'm saying. I'd rather go play. Like I'd rather go for a run. I'd rather do a basketball run with 55, 60-year-old attorneys and accountants. You know what I mean?
Not those young...
That I know aren't trying to prove something or won't be slighted or upset.
Not trying to make a statement or something like that.
If my jump shot is on and I'm schooling them. Right. You know what I mean? It's just... I'm concerned. I just pray to God everything works out tonight. That's all.
Well, I think, listen, that's a risk, Anita, that every team, every coach, every player takes whenever you go out there, whether it be a preseason game, whether it be the regular season opener. I do think, though, considering all the time that Victor Cruz missed, there is value to throw him out there, despite the risks, as you just mentioned. You know, he got some good work in the last preseason game, the MetLife Bowl, and while his numbers didn't jump off the page, which is not necessarily important, you know, the fact that he was able to beat Buster Screen on a route, you know, those are the things you want to continue to work upon. And, you know, they don't necessarily need to target him tonight. They don't need to necessarily run specific plays for him, but him just getting out there, adjusting to corners, pressing him at the line and so forth, I don't really think there's any harm if they perhaps give him a series or two just to get him back into the mix. I mean, another player that I think you could throw out there, Anita, what about Justin Pugh? You know, Pugh's missed the last two preseason games, whether or not there's value in even throwing him out there tonight to perhaps just get him a taste of football before they start up for the regular season.
How about let's go one step further? How about, you know, there are some NFL teams out there that are playing their first team offense and their first team defense because they're not happy with what they've seen so far in the first three preseason games. And you can't sit back. What is it? First team offense for the Giants, only four first downs, a total of 88 yards going into going into the game tonight. You know, I'm sure that doesn't sit well with Ben McAdoo and Mike Sullivan and Eli Manning. I'm sure they'd like to have a little bit more success heading into regular season game one against the Dallas Cowboys. But, you know, each coach operates differently. Doesn't look like we're going to be seeing the first team. But nonetheless, you know, I think it would have been nice if the Giants would have ended on a much more successful note after preseason game number three, heading into this game against the Dallas Cowboys in week one of the regular season.
Well, if you recall, last season, Tom Coughlin also played the majority of his starters in that final preseason game, Anita, based on what you just touched on. The offense was struggling, too, at this point last season, and he felt, you know what, wasn't too pleased with how the MetLife Bowl left off, so we're going to throw the guys out there in game number four. So I don't think that's necessarily unusual, and is it important in the big picture of things for the offense to get something productive going before the regular season opener? I don't know whether or not I would say that's priority number one, but I think for players that have been banged up, whether it be on offense or defense, whether they're established veterans or rookies, there's no harm in getting them out there for a series or two just so that they can get their feet wet. Because remember, after tonight, Giants are not playing a game until a week from this Sunday. So that is a lengthy period of time. They're going to practice, don't get me wrong. But, you know, you're talking about an extended period of time, and the whole thing is you want to continue to ride the momentum and the physicality into that opener against the Dallas Cowboys. For those of you watching on Twitter, we invite you over to Giants.com to watch the remainder of the program. She is Anita Marks. I'm Lance Meadows. So glad you could join us for Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. We're getting you set for the preseason finale tonight against the Patriots at MetLife Stadium. Also discussing some of the position battles as the Giants are going to have to make their way to 53 come Saturday. We're going to open up the phone lines here at 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat as well. Scott is in D.C., and he gets us going. Scott, what's happening?
Good morning.
Morning to you, Scott. What do you have for us?
I want to mention two things. You know, I've heard all of the hosts of this show refer to the offense last year being the sixth best offense. I guess that's either in terms of yards or points.
Well, eighth overall. Yeah.
Or eighth in points and sixth in yards, or vice versa. I just want to point out to all the hosts of the show that when the head coach of the team was asked this very question, what should be taken away from, you know, Rashid Jennings starting to get some yards at the end of the season, or the offense being a certain rating last season, that what he called that was loser talk. And I think he's got a very good point, and I hope the host of the show would stop with the sort of similar loser talk, which is, you know, trying to prognosticate results this year from results last year. I mean, the league clearly moves forward, and
who's doing that? I don't understand. I'm definitely not doing that. And I'm a little perplexed. What do you mean? What do you like? Give me an example of a question that was posed and an answer that was responded.
Oh, it's come up in a number of contexts about why the offense wasn't addressed as aggressively as the defense in free agency, and the need for the defensive changes to be greater than and improvements in the offense, and all the hosts have talked about, you know, using last year. We should assume that they're going to be no worse than they were last year because they have all the same people coming back on offense. In particular, as Charlie will note, before yesterday's transaction, or now with yesterday's transaction, you've got all the same offensive linemen. You know, you can't assume that the results this year are going to be the same with the same personnel. The league advances, other teams get better, other teams game plan.
How about if I told you
did something last year, and that's going to carry over to this year.
How about if I told you that based on statistics and analytics, that the Giants this season, their offense will go up against, as a whole, out of the teams and the opponents that they're going to face, they have the most favorable, a.k.a. easiest schedule against opposing secondaries in the NFL this season? Out of all,
it means nothing.
Really? It means nothing? Are you kidding me? It means nothing that this year.
All you need to do, you know, the people in Las Vegas that set the lines on these games know something. And they are not setting the lines based on last year's results. Every year, year in and year out, 6 to 8 teams that did not make the playoffs last year do make the playoffs. And 6 to 8 teams that did make the playoffs do not. Just look at the Giants Super Bowl winning. Just look at the last two Giants Super Bowl winning seasons.
Scott, I think
anyone who had scheduled them the following year would think, oh, we've got a tough game against the Giants.
I would agree with you that strength of schedule is a useless statistic because it's all based on last year and how opponents did. So I'm not going to disagree with you there. And as far as the rankings for the secondary, I don't know who did the rankings and whether they're based on last year's numbers and so forth. But this is the one thing I will tell you, which I think is fair. The Giants were 10th overall in offense in 2014. They were 8th overall in offense in 2015. Since McAdoo has taken over, whether it be offensive coordinator / head coach, there's been an upward movement of the offense. So I think that's a fair takeaway, that there's been some continuity over the last two seasons. I agree with you. It does not mean and does not guarantee that last year's numbers are going to be replicated this year. But if you look at your offseason game plan, and I think any team and any manager would agree, you have to go based on last year's results. So clearly, if the defense is ranked 32nd after the 2015 season and the offense is 8th, and you say to yourself, well, our nucleus for offense is coming back, then clearly your goal is we need to improve that 32 number on defense. So you can understand why there was a little bit more emphasis on improving the defense as opposed to an offense over the last 2 years under McAdoo, which has shown an upward movement.
The nucleus of both of our last two Super Bowl championship teams came back, and they couldn't punch their way out of the bag.
Well, but that's misleading. That's misleading. Hold on. In 2008, they were arguably the best team in the NFL, and unfortunately due to unpredictable circumstances and a bad playoff performance, they were ousted. But that 2008 team following the first Super Bowl, let's not forget, was one of the best teams in the NFL. So that's a little misleading,
okay,
Scott. The next one,
fair,
in 2012.
I just think that the head coach of this team has said that that's loser talk, and hopefully the players are listening to that, not hoping that they're going to get results this year based on what they did last year. I agree with the head coach on this. That's loser talk.
Second point I want to make is just a quickie.
You know, throughout the preseason, everyone's been talking about how there's very little game planning, next to no game planning for game one, very little game planning for game two. Game three, I guess, is supposed to be the closest thing to a regular season game, a dress rehearsal, I think you've called it, Anita. I just think that it's guess what? The other team does not game plan also. It's not like the Giants are at some competitive disadvantage in these exhibition games because they're the only ones that don't game plan. The other teams don't game plan, and basically what we've seen is results. Well, we've seen the results from this spring, this summer. It's, what, 1 for 22 on third down?
No, over the last two games, they're 2 of 24 on third down.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got that wrong. 2 of 24. Let's all hope that with game planning, they can do a little better than 2 for 24 going forward in the season.
Well, Scott, as I pointed out in terms of the previous few years, I'd appreciate the phone call. Last year, the team struggled in the preseason. If you go back and look at the stats, and it didn't necessarily indicate anything that happened in the regular season. I think you read into it a little, but you don't necessarily take it away that it's going to be an indication of what's yet to come. And when people reference that it's a dress rehearsal or they're not game planning, and I think Justin Pugh brought up a good point, Anita. What the coaches want to do is they want to see players in positions where maybe there's not 100% of a game plan, so they see how they handle themselves, whether they be out on an island, if the tight end has to know, well, the guy's coming from the right, the guy's coming up the middle, who's my assignment? They purposely don't necessarily game plan because they want to see how the players react spontaneously to those circumstances as opposed to, well, let's anticipate exactly what's going to happen every single minute of the game here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That's right. And what we've seen and the results without that is not terribly good.
Well,
let's hope it improves.
And
thank you for the phone
appreciate call. Appreciate the phone call, Scott. Thanks so much for chiming in.
The best analogy I could use in regard to, like, our business is, and I'm not sure how many, you know, auditions you've gone on, but you go on an audition, and all of a sudden they purposely have things go wrong. So the teleprompter breaks.
So now
you don't have a teleprompter. Now you have to ad lib, or the producer whispers in your ear, hey, breaking news. Teddy Bridgewater is out for the season with an ACL tear. Start talking about the Minnesota Vikings. So, yeah, they want to catch you on your toes,
yeah.
And they want to see how you react to certain, because that's the kind of stuff that does happen in a game. So, yeah, absolutely.
So I think that's something at least important to look at in terms of some of the production in the first few preseason games. That's not a legitimate excuse. You still want to see productivity, but they're purposely not necessarily laying out and scripting everything like they do in the regular season so that they can test some of these guys who are going to be backups and even some of the starters to see how they react on the fly, since in a game you're going to see a lot of things that you didn't necessarily see on film, because every week coaches try to take other coaches, twist their arm, and see if they can catch them off guard.
I'm curious to get your thoughts on Will Beatty and what are your expectations? Do you think he'll suit up tonight? No. Is it too soon? Like, what are you expecting from him tonight?
Well, I think he may suit up. I mean, I don't know how much of a workload they're going to give him. Remember, he did come in, he worked out for the team, he looked good. But, you know, in terms of how much physical contact he's done on his own away from the team, that remains to be seen. I think that they'll probably try to maybe get him involved, but I would not expect an immense amount of workload, because I think they also need to consider slowly easing him back in. In terms of long-term, Anita, you know, clearly when you could grab somebody that's experienced like him and also knows the system. Even though Will Beatty didn't play last season, he knows the system. He was under Ben McAdoo for his two seasons as offensive coordinator. So that's a bonus. The Giants have done this before. We've seen it with, for example, Chase Blackburn, the linebacker, came back midseason, knew the system. So this is not unusual for the Giants to do. But, you know, to expect him to come in day one, play a number of reps, claim a starting job, I don't know if I would go that far. I think right now the goal is to have somebody who's experienced who could provide some depth, and then maybe as the season progresses, if they do run into issues, he can certainly be in the mix for a starting job. That's what I think probably the best outlook for him is. I mean, I don't know if you can anticipate him playing like a typical backup would play in the fourth and final preseason game. That's also going to depend on, you know, what the coaches have told him and how much he's comfortable in taking on, obviously, so quickly. Remember, he only joined the team a few days.
It's intriguing to me. I'm curious. I'm curious what – will he even suit up tonight? Will he play? If he plays, is it a series? Is he just getting his feet wet? You know, how does that all come into play?
I think we'll probably, like any other player, you'll see things increase, you know, as the weeks go. I'm trying to remember, if I do remember correctly, and I keep bringing up this offensive lineman, Anita, Adam Snyder a few years ago joined the team late, mm-hmm. a veteran offensive lineman. He was cut.
I think he came over from San Francisco.
Correct. Or was it San Francisco or Arizona? I don't remember which of the two teams, but it was one of the teams from the NFC West. And Snyder, little by little, joined the team in practice every week. Initially, he wasn't ready to go. He wasn't even ready to suit up.
Right.
Now, Beatty knows the system, unlike Snyder. It's a little different, so that may change the dynamics. But once again, I still think the whole process is going to be progressively. Keep in mind, look at Leon Hall. When Leon Hall first joined the team, that first preseason game, Anita, he didn't play much. They eased him in. Second preseason game against the Bills, you saw his workload increase.
But again, you mentioned not knowing the system. Knowing,
correct.
Knowing,
well, that plays
system.
A role. But right. He was also a veteran who'd been out of football for a right. while. He'd been working out on his own, but he hadn't necessarily been going up against other players in a game setting. So I think that they may follow a similar script like they did with Leon Hall. Let's head back to the phone lines here, 201-939-4513. We've got Brian in D.C. Brian, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing? I'm in Virginia, actually.
All right, Brian. Well, appreciate that for calling. What's happening?
Hey, I had a comment and a question. I think ultimately Will Beatty, with his experience, I think he is going to end up back on the left side, at left tackle. Only because I feel like that's going to be the quickest way that we're going to get him and his caliber of play on the field. And I think Eric Flowers, being the mauler that he is, will end up on the right side. Ultimately, I think in a few weeks into the season, I think you're going to see that. A question, too. I agree, actually, with Victor Cruz getting on the field tonight, because I'm not sure that he isn't playing for his job. So I understand your fear, Anita, but I think Victor Cruz also has something to prove, and so he needs to be on the field to play for his job.
You know, and that's and I'll be honest with you, that's really the $1 million question. You know, you speak to a number of different, you know, media people who cover the Giants, and you ask them, hey, you know, do you think Victor Cruz is already, you know, locked down that spot on the roster or not? And some people say yes, some people say no. So, you know, it's a really big question mark.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if there's one play, I don't actually agree that, you know, I think in most cases, even if for a rookie player, if you've got one big play in the last preseason game of the year, that still may do nothing for you. But for somebody like Victor Cruz, you want to know that he can make that one big play, because you know he can do it consistently, but he's got to show that he can do it at least one time, because you know his track record.
Well, and that's why I also go back to it, not so much making the big play, Brian. I think it's beating one-on-one coverage like he did in the MetLife Bowl. If you can get him opportunities to run routes and win and beat individual defenders, then I think you're hitting on something where maybe heading into week one, he says, hey, you know what? We're playing football again. We're going back to the basics. This is like before my knee injury, where I lined up, I beat my guys, I stuck to my technique and so forth. So I think the more and more he does that, I think that will translate.
Exactly. One more point, and I'll hang up. But I hear some people talk about how we put all this money into the defensive line or the defensive side of the ball, and we didn't put any stock into the offensive side of the ball. I don't disagree with how Jerry Reese really managed the situation, because anybody who has to deal with constraints has to think about, well, what can I least afford to do without, or what can I least afford to lose or to slack off on or whatever have you. The defense was really, ultimately, that was a necessary thing for him to do. And you can't, there's not enough resources to put in both sides of the ball. And so I agree with your point. You know, we had already shown on offense that we were capable of at least getting the game to a point where if we had a stout enough defense, we could have won 4 or 5 more of those games. And so I don't disagree with how Jerry pretended it. Anyway, I want to thank you for taking my call, and I'll hear your response offline.
All right, Brian. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in.
And I know Jerry Reese has gotten a lot of criticism here on Big Blue Kickoff Live in regard to, you know, the assumption that he did not address the offensive line. And this is something that and I hosted with Paul a little bit earlier. Neely. And this is something that I discussed with Paul earlier this week, and that is, you know, we're not up there in the office. We don't know what calls Jerry Reese made. We don't know a potential deal or offer that Jerry Reese and the staff proposed to another offensive lineman. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, the final result was were there new faces here on that offensive line? No, there weren't. But you don't know what goes on behind closed doors. So, and this is just my opinion. I really do believe that Jerry Reese and the Giants went out and did their due diligence to try to bring in an offensive lineman and help improve this offensive line. it just didn't work out. But now Beattie's back, and I don't know about you, like I'm excited. I don't believe that Flowers is leaving the left side of the line. I'm the caller who just called in and said that he thinks Beattie will end up on the left side. I think the Giants are very committed and adamant about Flowers and developing Flowers in the left, creating the chemistry with Flowers, Pugh, and Richburg. I think this coaching staff is committed to creating and getting that chemistry even to the next step this coming season. So I think Beattie's going to play right. I don't think he will be put back at left.
Well, I'm in agreement with you. I think that the Giants have indicated that Flowers is their left tackle for the future. But, you know, it's not so much trying to figure out, Anita, you know, where Beattie may wind up. It's also the fact that Beattie was brought in as an insurance policy because you never can anticipate injuries and you want to have protection. Ereck Flowers missed a game last season because of an ankle injury and it lingered all season long. So you need to have somebody ready to go if Flowers misses a game. And that's how Will Beattie enters the equation. Just because he just re-signed with the team doesn't mean that all of a sudden he's in line to take over the right tackle spot. You know, there's also talk they may move him around. He indicated that he may be getting some reps at guard. That swing type of offensive lineman, that's what I envision Will Beattie to be. And I bring this name up a lot. Sean Locklear, when he was on the team a few years back, he was that jack-of-all-trades offensive lineman. David Deal assumed that role as well. A guy that if one of your main starters gets hurt, you can pluck in this one offensive lineman. Will Beattie, to me, can assume that role. I don't think his signing, his arrival, is an indication that there's going to be a shakeup in the starting lineup. I think it's the fact that they want that jack-of-all-trades, versatile offensive lineman who they've had in the past, and Will Beattie perhaps can answer that call, assuming that he gets reps at these various positions. He did indicate, though, he wouldn't be too comfortable taking reps at center, considering he has yet to snap the football to the quarterback. But I think guard and tackle, both positions, I think, are in play once he starts to get his feet wet.
And that's been the MO, right, of Giants, is yeah. they typically bring in guys, they draft guys that have the ability that can do that, can play guard, can play right side, can play left side. So it makes sense.
Absolutely. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. She is Anita Marks. I'm Lance Menno. So glad you could spend part of your Thursday with us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Let's head back to the phone. Sean is in New Jersey. Sean, what's happening?
Hi.
How are you, Sean?
My name is... I want to talk about the wide receivers.
Sure. What do you have for us?
I forget his first name, but King.
Tavares King.
Yeah. Do you think he's going to be on the roster, the 52-man roster this year?
Well, it's a 53-man roster. There's still one more spot to play with there, Sean. No worries. I do. I think King will make the 53. I think he's done enough. It's not so much his 2-touchdown game in the MetLife Bowl. It's what I've seen throughout the course of OTAs, the spring, as well as training camp. I think he's been by far one of the most consistent wide receivers on this team beyond the starting four or the top four, if you want to word it. So, I mean, barring a major setback tonight, I would assume that he's going to be one of at least the 6 wide receivers that I anticipate they'll keep.
Okay. Victor Cruz, because this is his first game back. That was his first game back. 1 catch, 4 yards. Like, how good do you think he's going to be?
Well, in terms of his projections and... I'm sure, who is it, Scott that called first? Anita, he's not going to like the answer to this because he's not a projection man. It's hard to indicate, Sean, you know, statistically what Victor Cruz is going to put up. The one thing that I look at what Victor Cruz can at least give this offense, and that's more of how I'm looking at it as opposed to, you know, he's going to get X amount of catches. If he's healthy and he can be in the lineup on a week-to-week basis, what he's going to do is his presence should hopefully open up opportunities for other players. That's what I think he will bring to the table. And I go back to that Vikings game, Anita, late last season when Beckham was suspended and you had, you know, the depth chart have to play a little bit more than they anticipated and separation production through the air was limited. And why? It's because when you don't have Beckham on the field, when you don't have Cruz on the field, the defense doesn't necessarily have to strain its resources. So I think Cruz's arrival, it's not so much about what he's going to do individually. I see what he can do perhaps for the rest of the players on this team. That's where I think he can make the biggest indentation on this squad. All right, Sean.
Now,
yeah.
now Josh Norman's on the Redskins, do you think Beckham's going to have more troubles versing him twice a year?
Would you like to weigh in?
Thank you so much for your phone
appreciate
call.
Appreciate the phone call, Sean.
I appreciate it. I will say this. Until Josh Norman got into Odell's head, Odell owned Josh Gordon.
Josh Norman.
Josh
yes.
Norman.
May have owned Josh Gordon, too.
Yeah, well, I've been drafting. I've had six fantasy drafts. I own him in all.
Yeah.
He's been falling to round 7 or 8. I highly recommend you grab him there. But, you know, I think if Odell would have been able to mentally stay in the game, I mean, would he have had an Odell game? Would he had, you know, 100 and whatever yards and 2 touchdowns? Probably not. But anyone who's able to put up over 100 yards and score 1 touchdown on Josh, that's an accomplishment. So I'm excited. I'm excited for these two games. I'm excited to see. I think worth the price of admission. I mean, when you talk about matchups around the NFL, whether it's an offensive lineman against a defensive lineman, you know what I mean? Whatever the case may be, man, I don't think any matchup in the NFL this season is more exciting than those two. Like, I'm surprised. Are any of those games on primetime?
I don't believe so.
I have
off
a feeling.
The top, man. Let's take
I
a
have
look
a
here.
I have a feeling that actually.
But remember, it may be flexed.
Well,
one of them
is
late in the
say.
Season,
I,
so
it's
that
last
could
game,
change.
It's the last game of the season, and I honestly believe that it's going to come down to Washington and the Giants to win this division. I'm picking the Giants to win 10 games. I think it's going to come down to Washington and the Giants, and it just might be that last game of the season. I truly believe that last game is going to be flexed, by the way.
Yeah, that game's 1 o'clock on January 1st, and then the one in week 3 is 1 o'clock, too. So as of right now, early afternoon affairs, but the one in late in the season could very well be flexed, not so much the one in week 3.
So hopefully we're home nursing our hangover, and by 8:30 at night, we'll be watching the Giants and Washington go at it. What was his first question again?
Well, the first question was about Victor Cruz and perhaps what he will be able to do this season, expectation-wise.
Yeah, you know, this is the thing for me. Like, we really haven't seen the physicality against Victor Cruz yet. And that's what I'm kind of a two-sided coin heading into this game tonight. I'm excited because I think he's going to see the physicality against this Patriots secondary, but I'm also nervous about it. So that's what I'm holding out judgment yet. Obviously, I'm as optimistic as possible because how can you not love Victor Cruz? He's so likable. But I haven't seen, even at practice, I haven't seen the physicality off the line of scrimmage and for him to be able to get that separation off the line. And that's what I'm going to be looking for tonight.
Well, and that's why I go back to, as opposed to projecting what his stats are going to be, his presence on the field, I think, once again, as it stands right now, perhaps is the biggest impact he can have on offense. As far as the Josh Norman question, you hope Odell Beckham learned his lesson from that Carolina game and that history doesn't repeat itself. But I guarantee you that Norman's probably going to test him. Okay, that's bound to happen. And it's important for Beckham to just let his play do the talking and not necessarily allow Norman to get the better of him. Because clearly, if he's going to see him twice this year, there's going to be a huge narrative each one of those weeks leading up to the game. And it's going to be right around the corner here in week 3. So it's important for Odell Beckham to go into that game like any other and treat him like any other corner, which is you line up, you beat him. And that's the end of it. Not necessarily worried about the war of words because we saw what happened, obviously, last season with Carolina. Let's head back to the phone lines here. And this is interesting. We have Rodney in Hampton. Rodney, what's happening?
Seriously?
Eric, how are y'all doing today?
I'm doing well, Rodney. How's things with you?
All right. Not too bad. Not too bad at all. How you doing, Miss Marks?
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning to you. I'm very pleased that we finally got some type of help on the offensive line because I just think Marshall Newhouse is just a nightmare. I'm having flashbacks of 2013 when the Philadelphia Eagles just ran rapid on us on the offensive line on poor Eli. But my question is, do we have any more cash to put out there for free agency pickups or like left guards or right guards or something? Because I'm not really sold on John Jerry myself either, you know.
Well, I think what you have to understand, Rodney, and the Giants are not necessarily in a bad position cap-wise, but the expectations of grabbing somebody off the street, you know, Beedy, who I'm sure everybody's going to point to, but Beedy had familiarity with the scheme. And it took a while for Beedy to get to 100% for them to also bring him back. Remember, because he was dealing with two injuries that sidelined him last year. But at this point in free agency, you know, if somebody's out on the street, there's a reason why that player's out on the street, whether it be because they're not 100% healthy or they're just not necessarily the equivalent to somebody else that's currently on a 53-man roster. I think it's more than likely, perhaps, Rondy, that you could see somebody get cut from another team and maybe a late addition through the waiver wire and so forth, as opposed to them going out and making a splash financially to bring in another player.
Okay. And what is the progression been on rookie middle linebacker B.J. Goodson?
Well, he's been very much in the mix in the preseason. If you look at the tackle totals, there's a number of games where he's been up there in terms of the individual totals. I think, though, right now it's more of Jasper Brinkley and Kelvin Shepard battling for the starting middle linebacker spot. But Goodson has a very good chance to make this roster. He has a very good chance to be a key special teams contributor in year number one, just like I think Jarrell Adams is in that same boat. But I, as far as being a starter year one, I think that may be a bit of a stretch because I think there's a little bit more experienced players ahead of him right now in the depth chart.
Okay, I appreciate y'all taking my questions. And Rodney Hampton was my favorite running back of all time.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Rodney, because I was going to say, if you don't like Rodney Hampton and you're Rodney calling from Hampton, we may have some issues on this program. So,
y'all have a good one.
All right, appreciate it, Rodney.
You know, just to, you know, and in regard to Beedy, and, you know, keep in mind, Beedy went and he visited a few other
– He did, yeah.
A few other organizations. You know, it's a very big pill to swallow at one point in time in your career to say, okay, I'm really not coveted at the left tackle position any longer, so now I've got to move myself to the right. Kind of like what a lot of corners do, right? Once that corner is no longer a quote-unquote shutdown corner or can no longer live on an island, if he wants to continue to thrive and play in the NFL, he needs to move to the safety position. And a lot of times, you know, it's hard to do, especially you've got a big ego. Most professional athletes do. So from what I understand, Beedy went out there. He met with a few teams. He worked out for a few teams. He spoke to a few teams. And nobody was really bringing him in to play that left tackle position. Why not come back home? Why not come – and you mentioned it when we started the show, right? Why not come home to an organization that you're comfortable with, who drafted you, you're familiar with, you know the staff, you know the quarterback, you know the game plan. If you're going to have to play right tackle somewhere, might as well be with the Giants if that opportunity presents itself, and sure enough, it has again.
Well, and what you just alluded to, the fact that if you're going to join a team this late, Anita, and we're approaching the fourth and final preseason game, I think it's easier for you, whether you're a veteran or a young guy, to join a team that you already know the jargon and the language of the offense. Because even somebody like Beedy, with plenty of years under his belt, he joins another team right now. He's going to have to now learn all new language, a new scheme, and so forth, and he's late to the game. So I think that this gives him the best chance to assimilate rather quickly right as the season starts. So I certainly don't blame him for perhaps, as you mentioned, looking at things from a big-picture perspective and realize, hey, if I want to continue my NFL career and the opportunities are not there on the left side, then maybe I need to be open to moving to another position, whether it be right tackle, whether it be guard, just having that state of mind where maybe I can't just be looked upon as a left tackle anymore. And there are players in the league that have made that transition. As you noted, I think the corner example is good. Charles Woodson comes to mind, who was a shutdown corner, moved to safety later on in his career, and we've seen other players do that. And that happens from
right.
time to time.
Right.
It's just a matter of, do I want to continue to play football? And if I want to continue to play football, what do I need to do to make sure I get a few more years? Versatility.
And just to give you an example of the opposite, who wasn't willing to continue to play football at the right tackle position, was Eugene Monroe. And so he decided to retire. You know, if he's going to sacrifice his body and the potential of, maybe having another concussion, or maybe he feel that, you know, playing the right tackle position, he's not getting paid his worth. So he decided, it's not worth it for me. I'm just going to retire if I can't play left tackle. So, you know, to each their own.
201-939-4513. So glad you could join us for Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, looking ahead to tonight's preseason game, some roster battles and so forth. Brandon is in New Jersey. Brandon, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, man?
How we doing, Brandon? Doing well. How's things with you?
I'm doing good. I don't think Jerry has been playing as bad as people problem. Thank you, Dad. I got on him a little bit yesterday. I was saying Bobby Harp should probably play the right guard position, but I think the team is more comfortable with John Jerry at the right guard position. I would put Beattie right into the right tackle position immediately because I seen on one play in that Jets play, Marshall Newhouse almost got my boy Eli killed, man. He's a liability out there. I know Giants probably not going to play Beattie tonight because he just came in and he didn't get a full practice. But this next week going into Dallas, they need to let this line gel together and get a full week of practice and let them get used to each other. The left side is good with Eric, Pugh, Richburg, and then I'll put Jerry at the right guard. Let him play, if he's healthy again, let him play the right guard position. And put Beattie at the right tackle position immediately, and let the line just gel all the way up to week one, and that'd be the starting five to put out there on Dallas. I like that line with Flowers, Pugh, Richburg, Jerry, and Beattie. What y'all guys think?
Well, I think it depends on, you know, what the coaching staff is thinking right now. If Beattie gets some work with that starting unit tonight, which I don't think there's any guarantee, maybe they can get a look at what you're laying out there. But I don't know. I think week one may be pushing it, depending on what their comfort level is with Beattie and how quickly he's ready to assume a role.
If they could get a full week of practice with that line and let him gel, I don't see why he couldn't be ready. He knows the offense, like you said. All you have to do is get acquainted with the guys next to him. And if I'm sure, I think Jerry played next to him in 14, but he just was at the left guard position. So I think Jerry and Beattie probably got a familiar, you know, they probably could get on the same page quicker, being the fact that Jerry has played next to Beattie before.
Well, I think that's a fair point. I'd have to look up specifically to see which game.
I remember.
No, I think you are right, Brandon, but I just don't remember which game it may have been.
I don't know which game it was neither. I'm not sure if it was that game when Odell made that catch or not. I think it was. I think they had Jerry at the left guard position then. But I think Jerry could get on the same page with Beattie real quick. And if I was the coaching staff, I'll let that five gel all the way through practice next week into going into the game.
Well, Beattie's certainly going to have to get on the practice field. There's no doubt about that. And
he needs to be at the right tackle position immediately. Get Newhouse out of it. So,
all right, Brandon. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in here. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Speaking of the offensive line, we've got our favorite guy who loves to get delved into this topic. Neela, it looks like we got a dial tone there, but let's hang with the lines here. We got Charlie on the line in Maine. Charlie, what's happening?
Line two.
Hey,
how we doing, Charlie?
Brandon just kind of said what I was going to say. There's no way they brought Beattie in here to be a swing tackle like Locklear. They actually brought him in to be a right tackle like McKenzie. The reason they brought him in is because Newhouse hasn't been doing the job, and they know that. They've been trying to replace him since, what, March, when they brought in a bunch of guys? And so, to me, it's obvious that he can beat out Newhouse probably on the first scrimmage they have. He should be able to beat Newhouse out of the right tackle. They've been giving Hart a chance to beat him out, and Hart is just not up to it. He's just not ready yet to do that. He's probably a better guard.
Well, remember, Hart has also gotten a lot of work at left guard because of Pugh's injury, too. He hasn't gotten nearly as much as perhaps we anticipated with the first team at right tackle because of Pugh's injury, which was something that they didn't necessarily anticipate. Here's the other thing I'll throw out, Charlie. I'm not saying that you're wrong, because we're going to have to see how things play out, but, you know, the same chatter was when Leon Hall was signed. Everybody assumed, you know, he's definitely going to be a starter. He's jumping ahead of the depth chart. And, you know, I wouldn't even say that a polished veteran like him has solidified a roster spot. So I wouldn't jump to conclusions that Beattie was brought in specifically to put at this position when, you know, things can change depending on the performance of other players.
It's true, but the difference is we have a little bit more depth at cornerback than we do at the offensive line. And I totally applaud bringing Beattie back. I'm glad Beattie reached out to Jerry Reese first and and kind of, you know, got the ball rolling. And so I think it's great. I think he will be starting right tackle. I hopefully it will be the first game against Dallas because that's when we're going to need him. But I think that will help the O-line a lot if he is our right tackle. So I just don't think he was brought in first because Newhouse is a swing tackle. That's why they brought him here in the first place, to be that swing tackle, not to be a starter. So he will be our swing tackle. And I think he, you know, he can do okay with that, you know, coming in for a play or two or a game or two, but just not starting, you know, 16 games. So I applaud Jerry Reese for that move, and I hope they bring in one more offensive lineman, a guard like Vasquez, Luis Vasquez, who can actually run block, and even if he's just backup, because we need some depth on the O-line, and I think he'd add great depth. If not, beat Jerry out as a starting right guard. So, anyway, that's all I got, guys. Thanks for taking my call, and you guys have a great day.
All right, Charlie. Appreciate the phone call. Wow, Charlie's in a good mood today.
Of course he is.
Well, I understand that, that was just a different
back.
Take. I'm not used to that type of take from Charlie, or that tone, I should say. It was a bit refreshing after a number of weeks with the same routine and the tweets and this and that. Seems content. It's like the little kid that finally gets the birthday gift that he's been asking for weeks.
Right. So he has to be happy.
Yes, absolutely. It was just, like I said, a little bit different to hear Charlie in that type of mood.
Have you given your prediction yet? I know we've hosted a few shows so far this preseason, but I can't recall. What are your expectations for the Giants this season?
Well, I think a lot is going to depend on, first of all, you know, how this division plays out early on. I'd like to see, number one, how the Cowboys perform with Dak Prescott under center. You know, does that offense continue to stay as productive as it was in the preseason? And, you know, it's somewhat of a mystery, Anita, with what this Cowboys defense is going to look like. You know, everybody talks about how they're not going to have much of a pass rush, and on paper, yeah, I think that's going to be a big challenge. I've seen, though, defenses where they don't have the named commodities, they surprise you early on. So that, to me, is an unknown. As far as the Redskins are concerned, they look really good offensively on paper. Will Kirk Cousins pick up where he left off, and will that continuity continue? You know, that's a question mark right now. And then as far as the Eagles go, brand new defense, new offensive philosophy with Doug Peterson. You got a lot of question marks across the board. So, I mean, I like to see what happens early on and what type of identity these teams showcase before perhaps I get a sense of what this division looks like. My mindset of the division hasn't changed today from where it was a few months ago, which is I think that everybody right now has a realistic shot. I don't think that there's a huge disparity between what I could say is the top team and the bottom team right now. I mean, I think the Eagles may have more question marks than any other team, but I don't see a huge disparity here when you look at this division right now. I think Washington, I think the Cowboys have a lot of strengths, and I think the Giants have a lot of strengths, but at the same time, you know, they all have question marks, at least on one side of the ball.
Interesting. Well, I look at this as a rebuilding year for the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, Chip Kelly came in and had a certain atmosphere, a certain system, a certain way of doing things. Now Doug Peterson's there, and it's night and day. It's much different, and that takes time and that takes change to flip that over, and also for Doug to go out and kind of start bringing in quote unquote his guys. So and I believe that Philadelphia, and I know this is hard for Eagles fans, but I believe Philadelphia has accepted the fact that this is going to be I know it's hard to have a rebuilding year in the NFL.
I was
going to
say, I mean, I really don't know if there's even such a thing. I mean, considering the parity in this league.
I know it's not a phrase that I think a lot of general managers and fans and coaches like to use, but I truly believe that in what I'm hearing and in the conversations I've had with those close to the organization, that, you know, that they're, of course, their expectations are high, but they're realistic in regard to this is a changing of the guard year for them. Okay, so I'm not expecting much from the Philadelphia Eagles. The Washington Redskins, I'm expecting big things, especially on the offensive side of the ball. The amount of talent that's on that offense, once Josh Doctson gets healthy, and
that rookie wide receiver,
and because he's dealing with an Achilles, a tweaked Achilles. I think their offense, I think their passing offense is going to be sick. I love the fact that Kirk Cousins has invested in himself. You're not going to find a player who's going to play as hard, I think, as Kirk Cousins, because he knows he crushes it. He's looking at Joe Flacco money. So I'm really intrigued and excited offensively about what Washington can bring to the program. I don't know a lot about their defense. For Dallas, you're going into the season with Dak Prescott. We had a caller call in the other day and said that he's more concerned about Dak Prescott at the quarterback position than Tony Romo, which is the most insane comment.
Well, there is the state of the unknown, though. That's what I will say, because you don't have a lot of film on him. So whenever you get somebody like that, there is a lot of unknown in terms of what Romo brings to the table. At this point, I think the Giants have a good idea of who Tony Romo is, considering how many times they've gone up against him.
I understand all of that, but you're talking about a rookie quarterback coming in, his first game of the season against the Giants, a Giants defensive line that is totally improved. I just believe that Olivier Vernon and JPP and Snacks, I think they're going to tee off on the kid. I really do. I think he's going to granted, yes, he's been the talk of the town for the preseason. But who's he gone up against? I think our sample size is small.
Absolutely.
I think the future is extremely bright for Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys. I think he has the potential and the athleticism and the smarts and everything I'm hearing in regard to how he's able to read defenses. I think the future is really bright. But to expect this young man to come into the season and win football games for the Dallas Cowboys, and you could say, well, wait a minute. Joe Flacco did it. Russell Wilson did it. Heck, Mark Sanchez did it. Yeah, but look at the defenses. They had top five defenses in the NFL and phenomenal special teams when those young rookie quarterbacks did that. So the pressure to have to come in and put up 28, 32 points a game wasn't there for them. They didn't have to do that to win ball games. So with that being said, I think the Giants have the potential of winning 10 games. I think it'll come down to them in Washington. I think that last game of the season will be flexed, and I think it's all going to be riding on that game, potentially maybe who wins the division and who gets in as a wild card.
Well, I feel like every single year it always comes down to week 16 and week 17, so I wouldn't necessarily be surprised if it comes down to the wire in some capacity. I think what the Cowboys are going to try to do, just piggybacking off of your point, Anita, is they're going to try to obviously lean on their running game, their offensive line, and perhaps take the pressure off of the rookie quarterback so that he doesn't necessarily have to single-handedly win games, similar to what they did in 14 with DeMarco Murray and winning the time of possession. And they also had an opportunistic defense that year. They were number two in takeaways in the NFL. That's something that, of course, they can't bank on. Let's get to a few tweets here before we wrap up the program. I know a number of you who couldn't get to the phone lines have some question marks on Twitter, so let's run through a few of these, and then obviously we will wrap up the program and give you some rest and relaxation before you gear up for tonight's preseason game. Let's take a look at some questions here with respect to, I know there was one on the wide receiver core and perhaps how many wide receivers they will keep. Here we go. This comes from @VLothan. How many receivers will the Giants keep on the roster? Six usually is the money number, and I'm probably going to say that that will be the number they're at least targeting again. As I mentioned, if you look at the top four, if you were to go through those projections, you know, Beckham, Shepard, Cruz, and Harris. So to me, I say five wide receivers left. I think there's two spots still up for grabs, based on what happens tonight as well as their meetings after the game. But I look at it as I think six is the golden number here.
What's the one thing, and again, you do the pregame show and the postgame show. What's the one thing? What are you leading the pregame show with? What's your hot topic going into this game tonight, Lance?
Well, the position battles.
Yeah, but
clearly.
What's the number? What's your number one topic?
Well,
obviously,
one topics is going to be clearly the offensive line and the fact that they're still looking for the backup positions and so forth and trying to establish an identity in this last game, and then the wide receiver position. Tavares King, who was reflective of his performance last week, he thinks he's in a good position, but, you know, that sixth one, if you want to throw it out there, Jeremy Davis, you can make a case for him. Roger Lewis, you can make a case for him. I mean, Darius Powers look good in practices. We haven't necessarily seen much in the games. And then Anthony Dablé, the wide receiver from France. I mean, those are four right there that can somebody separate themselves from the pack tonight.
So mine are Odell, Sterling, Harris, Cruz, and Davis. Barring that Victor Cruz comes out of this healthy, God bless. I think the six, I think it'll come down between King and Lewis Jr. That's what I think.
Who do you have an edge right now that you'd give to somebody?
I mean, obviously the two touchdowns that King scored in preseason game number three, I think in a public sense gives him the edge. But I spoke to a scout about Roger Lewis Jr., and he said to me, if he did not have the off-the-field issues, he probably more than likely would have gone in the third round this year in this year's NFL draft. The third round. So you know, are teams out there still, you know, concerned about having him on their roster? I don't know. Could he sneak in through the practice squad? I don't know. He's just looked, to me, all around, like, all around, encompassing. OTAs, practice. I know we haven't seen a lot in preseason games, but I think the young man is special. I think he's got immense talent. It's tough. Again, it's going to be one of those tough decisions.
Well, which makes tonight's game that much more intriguing. Just want to throw out one more tweet here before we wrap up the program. A.J. Marshall brings up an interesting point at A.J. Marshall 3. Will Beattie still has to learn a new philosophy with his new offensive line coach, Mike Solari, and Solari has pointed that out when he spoke to the media. The scheme is the same in terms of the offense, but he's bringing up things to the offensive linemen that they didn't necessarily utilize technique-wise and so forth with the Giants in previous years. All right, so that is going to wrap things up for us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. The pregame gets started at 6.05 p.m. Eastern on WFAN. For those of you in the local area, we'll have the Patriots game tonight, and then tomorrow, Big Blue Kickoff Live back here on Giants.com at 10 a.m. Eastern, recapping the game and projecting the 53-man roster. A reminder, Big Blue Kickoff Live next week returns to its usual time, and that is noon, as we get you set for the start of the regular season. For Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com.